Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning, I'm bringing some sound from the Atlanta Braves' Hank Aaron Heritage Week that took place at the end of June. I was able to join the press conference that included former Attorney General Eric Holder, NBC broadcaster Bob Costas, and namesake for the Heritage Week, Hammerin' Hank Aaron. Please join as we listen to the press conference of those three gentlemen who were being honored by the Atlanta Braves for the Hank Aaron Heritage Week. We are going to start with Attorney General Eric Holder, who talks about how it feels to be honored by his hero, Hank Aaron.
...to be considered for the award, but to get the award from a person who's been one of my idols makes this event really special. Henry Aaron, Mr. Aaron, is a person I've looked up to for as long as I can remember. Growing up in the 50s in New York, I followed his exploits as a Brave, both in Milwaukee, and in Atlanta. I remember where I was the day he broke Babe Ruth's record. And he is one of those people who has been a quiet force for positive change in this nation. Doesn't get the credit I think that he deserves, certainly during his career, but I think he has in his later life. And so to get an award from, you know, one of the people who's your idols is something really special.
What was he was during his career and impacting civil rights legislation?
Oh, I think he was. I mean, I think, you know, people tend to forget that what he did, the example that he set, was unique. You know, we had the ability at that time to point to people like him. Right, as we pointed to Jackie Robinson before, people, and Joe Louis before that. I mean, people who were examples, who conducted themselves, carried themselves in great ways, and made it more difficult for people who were opposed to civil rights legislation to say that these people, you know, were not ready. You could point to Hank Aaron, you know, and say, that's who we are. He represents the best of us, and we're deserving of equal treatment.
You have so many athletes today who are speaking out on social justice issues. What's your thoughts on that?
I think that's a good thing. You know, people who have a voice, I think, have a responsibility to speak for those without a voice, the voiceless. I think, you know, Henry Aaron did that. Jackie Robinson did that. Muhammad Ali did that. And I think it's good to see that athletes today are not only about the sports that they are involved in which they excel, but they're using, you know, the familiarity that they have to make, you know, this nation better. And I think that's a good thing.
Sometimes people in the public are like, oh, you shouldn't be doing that. You should just play your sport and shut up. And some of that. What's your...
You know, I mean, for those who always want to put people in certain roles and never listen to them, I mean, I think you judge people on their merits, you know. Just because you're an athlete doesn't mean that your views are necessarily going to be good ones. But if you're an athlete and you have studied an issue and you're expressing a view that is based on that research that is well-reasoned and is, you know, well-grounded in fact, no, I think you're deserving of attention.
Sometimes sports tend to bring us together, but we're in an era where sports has divided the nation. How can we get back to that where we're all cheering for the same thing and the same team?
Well, you know, I think that we always tend to look back and tend to forget our history. Sports, yeah, brings us together most of the time, but doesn't always bring us together. I remember the Olympics in 1968, you know, in Mexico City. People weren't particularly happy with Tommy Smith and John Carlos when they raised, you know, their fists. And yet they wanted to express a point. They wanted to talk about, you know, the need for equal treatment of all people in this country. Now, it is true that on Sundays, football, you know, brings us together when it's allowed to do so. And that's a good thing. But like everything else in our society, sports brings us together, sometimes divides us. Oftentimes exposes, you know, inequities in our society, and I think that's a good thing.
How do you feel when you see the athletes not going to the White House when they win championships?
Well, you know, they have that right. I mean, they're expressing a view, and I respect that. In the same way that those who do go, I respect, you know, that as well. This is a nation that's founded on giving people the ability to express their opinions. And when we express diverse opinions coming from good places, I mean, that's, we have to give each other the space, you know, to do that. That's how progress is made.
Politics become a major part of sports. Politics, your expertise.
I'm not sure I'm an expert in politics, but yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we live in a really polarized time, and so you see us polarized in a whole bunch of ways, and I think that it would be naive to think that we would not be polarized, you know, in athletics as well. So you see it playing out in sports as you do in other areas.
I know you don't work in baseball, but does it bother you to see the low numbers? Like, for instance, the Braves only have one black player.
Yeah.
The number of black ball players are lower than when you grew up. There were a lot of black ball players.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of – it's a distressing thing in some ways, you know, because – the people who were my heroes growing up, I was, you know, I grew up in the 50s in New York, and baseball was the major sport. And I saw, you know, Henry Aaron, Frank Robinson, Willie Mays, Ernie Banks. I mean, you know, these guys are titans in my life. And to see the drop-off in the number of African-American players and also the drop-off in the number of African-American fans is something that is it's hard for me to imagine, because a big thing in my life was going to a ball game with my dad and my brother. That was a big deal. You know, my mother, that was when she got a break. The men were out of the house. We went to a ball game. And not having young men, African-American men, having the ability to have that experience in the way that I did, there's nothing like a ball game. You know, you can be in a basketball arena, and I'm a big basketball fan, but to be in a stadium eating a hot dog with the sun beating down on you, with your dad, that's as good as it gets.
Is there a responsibility to fix it? And if so, who's that responsibility to lie with?
Well, you know, I think we got to make it, make the sport available to people. I grew up in New York City, but, you know, there's not much green in New York City. And yet we had a ball field, you know, three blocks from my house where I could put on a Little League uniform, take a bat up there. The Boys Club of East Elmhurst and Corona in Queens. We were sponsored by some, you know, local merchants. We had uniforms. I wanted number 44. I wanted to be Hank Aaron. I couldn't hit a curveball. So I had to look other places. But so I think we need to come up with those kinds of opportunities, you know. Devote a little space to ball fields. Increase the interest in the game, in the sport. If people, young African-American men, are given the opportunity and the familiarity with baseball, we'll fall in love with it again.
Next, we're going to hear from NBC broadcaster Bob Costas, and he speaks about his relationship with Hank Aaron.
The role he played at the time that he was prominent as a player wasn't just a baseball role. He was an actual civil rights hero. And the idea that he thinks that I'm worthy of being in some small way involved in this means a great deal to me, both for the issue, but also for the man, because I like Hank so much and admire him so much.
Do you remember the first time you saw Hank Aaron, maybe play or whatever it was?
First time I saw him play was probably on a black and white television in the World Series against the Yankees in 1958. I was maybe 6 years old. And I lived in New York, so I was rooting for the Yankees. I was rooting against Hank Aaron and Eddie Matthews and Warren Spahn. Later, when I began broadcasting sports for a living, Hank was toward the end of his career. We probably crossed paths, just a pleasant hello. But then subsequently, I interviewed him more times than I can count. And I think I gained his trust to a certain extent. Hank is a very private man, and he doesn't try to exploit his fame. And so if you're going to spend some time with him and interview him, he wants to make sure that the interview and the conversation is going to be of some substance. It's not going to be the 5,000th question about what pitch did Al Downing throw you or something like that. And I think that our conversations took the direction that he was comfortable with.
Bob, a number of athletes obviously are at the forefront of social justice issues.
Yes.
Today. What's your view on that? It's something you embrace.
Well, the circumstances have changed, which is not to say that injustice doesn't still exist, but the dynamics are different. There are greater shades of gray in some cases, but generally speaking, I think it's a good thing to see athletes more involved. There was kind of a generation or two in between the Hank Aarons, the Curt Floods, and even before that, Jack Johnson or Jackie Robinson or others, before, in between Bill Russell and Arthur Ashe and Kurt Flood and Hank Aaron and Billie Jean King in her own way and Muhammad Ali, of course, and Tommy Smith and John Carlos. In between, there was a lull period. Now I think a combination of circumstances have reinvigorated that. And what I hope is that it's not confined only to African-American athletes or people of color. I hope that everyone with a conscience that has something to say gets on board. That's why I think someone like Chris Long of the Philadelphia Eagles is important. This isn't just about black Americans or people of color. It's about America, and America, as Martin Luther King said, rising up and living out the meaning of its creed. We've come a distance in that direction, but there's a distance to go.
How do you feel when you see whole teams not going to the White House? Normally, that it used to be like a place of civility. Now it seems like you kind of can't go for a lot of people.
You know, I actually think that whether it's the Golden State Warriors or the Cavaliers saying they wouldn't go if they had won, or Greg Popovich and Steve Kerr saying what they said, or the Eagles taking the stand that they took, I actually think that has more clarity than the national anthem protests do, because the anthem protest can be spun in a number of different ways, and whether people like it or not, Trump spun it to his political advantage with his base. Whereas, if Steve Kerr, Steph Curry, LeBron James, Greg Popovich say, hell no, we won't go, that says one thing pretty clearly, and it cannot be misinterpreted. They're not saying we won't go to the White House. They're not saying we won't honor our country. They're saying we object to the tone set by the man who sits in the Oval Office. It's a pretty clear message.
And last but not least, Hank Aaron expresses his thoughts on the Braves Heritage Weekend and the fact that the weekend will forever be known as the Braves Hank Aaron Heritage Week celebration.
God, I can't tell you what it means. It means an awful lot to me to have this occasion. And really, I guess the thing that is so great about it is the fact that the Braves are being involved in it, you know, really. And you have friends like Bob Costa and other people coming. So it means an awful lot to me.
So many athletes today are involved in social justice issues and speaking out. What's your thought about that?
Well, I try to make myself known by letting people know how I feel about certain things, you know. And there are certain issues that I try to make people understand that I'm not totally satisfied with. But, you know, I'm only one person, and I try to do the very best that I can.
Do you enjoy that? Do you support the fact that a lot of people, particularly today, particularly athletes, are speaking out?
More so than they did when I was playing, you know, really. They speak out now more. Well, they speak out more now than they did, say, when I was playing.
How was it when you were playing? You played during the height of the civil rights movement. Was that tough on you to see what was going on?
You know, Andy Young and I talk about this quite often, and I feel, to be very honest with you, I feel somewhat guilty that I didn't do as much as I possibly could have done. And he told me, he said, don't ever feel that way, he said, because what you was doing on your end was much, much more than what we were doing on our end. So he kind of makes me feel a little better that some of the things that I didn't do and could have done, that I feel that I did the very best that I could do.
Did you feel those pressures on the ball field or around the teammates, or the civil rights era swirling around you? Did that play out on the ball field?
No, never did. That was one of the good things about playing the game of baseball. I felt like the good Lord works in mysterious ways, and somehow, when I got to the baseball field, everything was left alone. You know, I was strictly a baseball player and played baseball.
Mr. Aaron, if you won a world if you were 28 today and you were playing on the Braves, they won a world championship, would you go to the White House?
If I was 28?
Yeah, you were playing today. Right?
Would I go to the White House?
Yes.
You mean pass by it or what? I don't think you meant go visit anybody, did you?
Well, you know what
I mean? I've been to the White House before. But you know, I can understand where the players are coming from. I really do. I understand where they're coming from. I understand that they got their own issues and things that they feel convicted about, and they have a right to do that. You know, and I probably would be the same way. There's no question about it.
So what would your message be to players now who might be in that middle situation where they feel like they're stuck on the fence, they don't know if they should voice their opinion or keep quiet?
I think they ought to voice their opinion. I think no matter what they feel, I guess I'm answering your question. I think they should voice their opinion, you know, regardless to whatever one may think. We didn't get to where we are today because we sat back and kept our mouth closed or scratched our head and sat and didn't do anything, you know. And I think that if you have an opinion, you should voice your opinion. And if you voice your opinion, then let people know that is your opinion and you're not speaking for anybody but yourself.
Does it bother you that there are fewer black ball players than there were when you were playing?
It does bother me. It does bother me. I wished I knew. I wished I knew. I don't know what the answer is. I wished I knew what the answer was. But I think you can go back and you can say, well, the reason that we don't have as many black athletes today as we had, especially baseball players, is because of when you have an economic struggle, when I say an economic struggle, when you have a struggle that it requires the husband and the wife to make ends meet in a household, then you're going to have trouble with the kids, you know, because you're not going to have time to have with your kids, to play with them, to go to them out and let them play like they should play.
It seems like it's in particularly baseball, like you said. There's still a lot of black players in football, obviously.
Yeah, for some reason, and it's a reason for that, too, because I think these kids get scholarships, and in baseball, it's no scholarships. I don't know. I really don't. I've addressed it. I've talked to the commissioner about it, and I'm sure he's aware of it. I've talked to Mr. Selig about it. I've talked to all of them about it. You know, and it is a problem, and it needs to be addressed.
I just want to clarify something you said earlier too about teams not going to visit the White House these days. And you said you supported the fact that everybody has to think about that decision, and you would think about that decision too. But did you say actually what you would do?
I didn't say it. I think if I did say teams, I made a mistake. I said me personally. Yeah, I'll speak for myself. What I meant was that would I visit the White House? Would I go? I had no reason to go. I've been there once or twice, and nobody there I want to see.
Can I ask, is it Little League? Do we have to start with Little League? It got too expensive. They shut down some of the organizations. How do we bring back that flourishing African-American young kids playing baseball?
Well, I think that's one way you can do it, with Little Leagues. But by the same token, you just don't have the ballparks in the area to build those parks with. You got to have – baseball is a very, very expensive game. It's not like basketball. I mean, you can take a basketball hoop and put it up in this arena, and you can play basketball. You can't do that with baseball. Every time you lose a baseball, it costs you $4 or $5. Every time somebody slides, tear a pair of pants, costs $10, $15. Bats cost money. And we just don't have that kind of money to spend on Little League. We have to have help in everything that we do, you know.
One question on the current team. Are you watching the team, or are you enjoying what the team is doing, the current team right now?
Oh, the team is doing fine. They've done just fine. I think if they keep winning the way they're doing and playing, I think it's a good chance that they'll be in the playoffs.